In 2 Samuel chapter 14, so I'm going to begin in verse 1. 2 Samuel chapter 14, and the title of this chapter that we have this morning is David and Absalom. And that's it. I think that's enough said. We're going to see this morning that we're going to see a relationship between a dad and a son. And unfortunately, we're going to see a relationship between a dad who loved the Lord and a rebellious son in this case. And that's the lesson that we're going to find here. And there's a lot of lessons that we see here. Even if you're not a dad or a rebellious son, you'll be able to find a lot of, I think, practical teachings you can apply to your life. But as we get into this, I want to begin here in a minute with just a, I don't want to take too long, but a little bit of a biographical, I guess you say, sketch or so along those lines of Absalom. Really, in this chapter, we're introduced to him as far as who he is. And so as we get into this, I want to begin here and give you some thoughts on Absalom before we get into it. So you kind of have an idea what kind of man he was. The Bible does tell us that he was David's son. So that being said, he was, I guess you could say, royalty in Israel. He was a prince. And though he was not destined to be the king immediately, after the death of his oldest brother, which, by the way, he was the one who caused that. And then many believe the other brother is either out of the picture. But it appears that Amnon or Absalom was kind of next in line to be the king. And many of the people, as we'll see here this morning, desired him to be the king. They wanted him to be the king. And so that's who Absalom was. As far as him, his character, you know what we find in the Bible? First, you'll notice, not only have we seen, but we'll see it today and also as you go through the scriptures, he was courageous. He may have been rebellious, but there's no doubt he was a courageous man. As far as the scriptures indicate, he never feared anything or anybody. Now that can be for good, but I guess it can also be for bad. You know, those of you that have children, have you ever seen young children? That's one of the concerns, is they have no fear of any kind of danger and they'll do anything. Absalom apparently took that into adulthood as well. I mean, he was a courageous man and didn't fear anyone or anything. I mean, he took everything head on, is what we find in scriptures. Also, he was cunning. He schemed and he planned. Not only did he have courage, but I guess you could say he had some smarts up here. He schemed, he planned. He was one of the few men, I think, that could get Joab's attention. You know, the scriptures tell us Joab was a tough man, not to be taken lightly. People didn't mess with him, but Absalom did. Absalom had no fear of Joab and also was able to get his attention. And we'll talk more about that later in our lesson this morning. But he also tickled the people's ears. He told them what they wanted to hear. He knew how to get people to follow him. He was a very cunning man, is what he was. Also, I believe we find in the scriptures that Absalom was patient. Now, I have the number one over there because I believe in his books that's what he was. You know that you ever heard that being a narcissist? That definitely fits Absalom. Everything was centered around him, and in his books, he was number one. I guess you heard that phrase, the world revolved around him. That was Absalom. At least that's how he thought. But the Bible tells us he was patient. You know, we saw in the scriptures that he was willing to wait 2 years to pay back his brother. Also, we find this morning, we'll see that he was willing to wait until an opportunity presented itself to take the throne from David. So he was a very patient man. Also, he was ambitious. Nothing would stand in his way to get what he desired. Now, there's nothing wrong, I don't think, with having some zeal and some energy, but when we are just taken over with ambition that we're just going to get what we want, then there's going to be problems because that selfishness is involved and pride. And then next thing you know, we're going to do whatever we want to get what we want. And that's what we find with Absalom. And finally, and we're going to move on, he was powerful. He was powerful. Without a doubt, he was powerful physically. You know, we'll see this morning, he was a physical specimen to behold. So he was powerful physically. But I also think he was powerful up here. He was a thinker. He was a smart man. You know, when we look at Absalom, without a doubt, he was a dangerous man. You know what's sad? I think had he loved God like his dad did, who knows what kind of king this man would have been. He may have been a great leader for Israel. But sadly, Absalom instead, I guess you say, lived for himself 100%. And he applied all of his talents to what he could get and how he could live life. You know, as we get into this chapter, now we're going to go into begin reading here in chapter 14. But as we get into that, I just wanted to give you a little bit of a sketch of Absalom, who he was from the scriptures, what we find there. And we'll notice, I mean, we're going to see it really play out in this chapter. We're going to see him use every advantage he gets so that way he could take the throne from David and basically become king, I guess you say. Now, it begins here. Next week, we'll see the fulfillment of all that. Next week is when he really rebels. But this is where it begins, right here, as he gets himself back into Israel. Now, beginning in verse 1, it says, "Now Joab, the son of Zeruiah, perceived that the king's heart was toward Absalom. Joab sent to Tekoa and fetched thence a wise woman and said unto her, I pray thee, feign thyself to be a mourner and put on now mourning apparel and anoint not thyself with oil, but be as a woman that had a long time mourned for the dead, and come to the king and speak on this manner unto him." So Joab put words, it says there, in her mouth. And I want to start there this morning. We're going to see basically three main characters of this chapter. We're going to see Joab, David, and Absalom. Now Joab, for those that aren't aware, Joab was David's, not only he was the general of the army, I imagine he was his right-hand man as far as whenever something came up. Joab would go and take care of issues and problems. But he was also David's nephew, so they were related. And more than likely, they were closer in age than many nephews. I mean, David was the youngest, and here Joab was born to one of David's older sisters. So they were friends from, a year's past. And Joab often, he helped David many times, but he also hindered David many times. He also created problems. Now, in this chapter, the Bible tells us at the very beginning that Joab had a plan. We find here that Joab evidently perceived that David was discouraged and that he was distressed because Absalom was gone. Last week, here's the reason why Absalom was gone. The Bible tells us that he had killed his oldest brother in vengeance, paid him back. Well, he couldn't stay in Israel. He was a murderer. So he left the land. And for 3 years, the Bible tells us, he remained pretty much outside Israel. And that's where we pick this up here this morning. He's outside Israel as far as the land. I guess you say he's nearby. But for whatever reason, David didn't go after him right away. David didn't bring him back. David let him go. And for 3 years, he stayed there with his other, with his grandpa there in Geshur, outside of Israel. Now, Joab perceived he was sad. Have you ever looked upon someone, and especially if you know somebody, you know someone well enough, you can tell if something's bothering them? That's here what happened with Joab. I imagine he knew something was bothering David, and I imagine after a conversation and over the 3 years, he picked up the fact that he missed Absalom. Yes, he's probably upset that Absalom had done what he did, but he was also, missed his son. Now, David was a caring dad. You know, there's a lot of things you can say about David. He made many mistakes, but he loved his children. He loved them, and he would help them. And sometimes I think it may have hindered him at times because he was willing to almost do anything for his children. Now, Joab understood David's dilemma. You know, here's his dilemma. He couldn't bring Absalom back without punishing him. David's the king of Israel. David's not just some guy sitting in his house somewhere where he's going to try to hide Absalom. David's the king of Israel. I'm sure everything he did was noticed. And if he brought Absalom back, Absalom was a murderer. Not only did he murder another individual, but the person he killed was the heir to the throne, the oldest son of David. And so it presented a real sticky situation for David. I mean, I imagine he wanted his son back, but how could he bring him back without providing some type of punishment, without dealing with the sin that was involved? Anyway, Joab had a plan. Now, Joab was a lot like Absalom. I guess you could say they were two of a kind. When you look at this, I could see them two just rubbing each other raw at times because they were real similar. And here, he was cunning as well, and he developed this plan. He went out and he found this woman. The Bible tells us it was a wise woman. You know what that refers to? The word refers to someone who is subtle and someone who is able to, use words wisely. In other words, she was one of those people that could, use her words to make something that wasn't correct sound good. Have you ever heard of people like that? Have you ever noticed that we got a whole bunch of them in Washington, D.C., I think, that they can use words to make everything sound good. That's what she was. She could use her words to impress people. She was very wise. She was subtle. She was probably quick-witted. And here, Joab went and got her to play this part. Now, as we get into this, when we see the conversation between David and this woman, keep in mind, she is on an errand, so to speak. She's on a mission, and her whole goal basically was to convince David or encourage David to bring Absalom back. That's what Joab wanted. The Bible doesn't tell us why. I've often wondered why myself. But Joab wanted maybe he wanted David to be happy, or maybe there was an ulterior motive. But he wanted to help David bring Absalom back. And so he found this woman and he sent her there. And the Bible tells us she played it up good. It says there, and we're in 2 Samuel 14, verse 4, says, "And when the woman of Tekoa spake to the king, she fell on her face to the ground and did obeisance and said, Help, O king. And the king said unto her, What aileth thee? And she answered, I am indeed a widow woman, and mine husband is dead. And thy handmaid had two sons, and they two strove together in the field, and there was none to part them, but the one smote the other and slew him. And behold, the whole family is risen against thine handmaid. And they said, Deliver him that smote his brother, that we may kill him, for the life of his brother whom he slew, and we will destroy the heir also, and so they shall quench my coal which is left, and shall not leave to my husband neither name nor remainder, she says, upon the earth." Now, this morning, here's what happened basically. Here's what we find. She went in with a story. Now, the Bible tells us Joab provided the words. In other words, he prepared her. She was given the words, as far as probably she was given the goal, you know, to get David to somehow agree. Now, of course, he couldn't give her all of the information. That's why he picked someone who was wise and quick-witted that could go ahead and play out the part that he wanted. And so the Bible tells us that she dressed the part. She pretended to be mourning. She put the clothes on, put the ashes on her head, and she went on in before David. Now, I want to just mention something so we know what's happening or what's occurring. You know, customs of the day are different than today. What I mean by that, the kings, especially in Israel, they would hear the problems of the people, and they would make decisions. David would often meet with people as they came and listen to them. We know that David was a good judge, as far as the Bible tells us that. And then he would render a decision based upon, you know, all the facts. That was part of being king. And so the Bible tells us that she went in there, probably got in line, maybe met an advisor or somebody that would direct her to David, and then eventually stood there before the king with her problem. Now, her problem, of course, was just I guess you could say it was a story is what it was. And there was, it was set up by Joab so that way she could encourage David. Now, real quick, I'm not going to get into all the details of her acting, but I'll give you some thoughts as we go here. David received her, listened to her like he normally probably would everybody else. She approached him with respect, and then she presented really a sympathetic story. I think most people know if you want to get someone's attention, provide some sympathy of some kind. You can get them to feel for you a little bit, then maybe they'll listen. And here, that's what she did. This was when you think about it, I don't think it was true, but it was a heart-wrenching story. This poor woman was a widowed woman. In other words, her husband had passed on. Now, we're not told, she didn't provide any details on that, at least here. And then she said, I have but two sons. Now, keep in mind, back then, women couldn't go and get a job and they couldn't work. If their husband passed on, their sons would support them and take care of them. They would move into with them. And here she tells a story that, guess what? My two sons fought one day in this field. Evidently, in her story, there were no witnesses out there. She said, my two sons fought, they went at it, and one slew the other. I mean, it got so vicious that one of them took the life of the other. Now, you know, brothers can really go at it sometimes. And maybe that's what happened. At least that's the story she told. And then the other son, the one that remained alive, of course, because he killed his son, he was banished. Now she tells David, she goes, guess what? On top of that, the rest of my family has come to me and said, guess what? We want him to pay the price for killing your other son. Now, she makes this appear to be like just a, I guess you say that her whole world has been turned upside down. Now, it probably, if something like this would have happened, I'm not saying it wouldn't have. But her plea to David, as we'll see in a minute, was to spare her son. Her son that she said was a murderer. Her son who fought against her other brother. Her son who had created the problem. Basically, that's what she pled for. And the Bible tells us that she really was clever, is what she was, I think. We'll read some of this again here as we go through this, and I'll point out a few thoughts here of her cleverness, the way she argued for her case. In verse 7, we've read there, she said, the whole family is risen against thine handmaid, and they say, deliver him that smote his brother, that we may kill him. And then, if you'll notice, she says, and we will destroy the heir also, and so they shall quench my coal which is left. In other words, she's saying, guess what? If they take my son, there's nothing left for my family. My dad or her husband's line would be gone, because that was the last one. She only had two sons. And so basically, that was a clever argument. Now, I'm not saying it's correct. Keep in mind, this isn't, as far as the Lord, This wasn't a message from God to David. This was a message from Joab through this woman to David. And her argument basically here was, guess what? Please spare my family. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with family. There's nothing wrong with sparing anybody else. But you know what she did? She made it appear. When you think about this, she made it appear that his sin wasn't so bad after all. That this guy should be spared. It's okay. We should be willing to ignore that. And you know what she also did? She made her family, the ones who were looking for justice, she made them appear as they were evil. They were the wrong ones. They were mean, trying to get justice on my son who had committed this crime. Also, another thought I give to you too, in her argument, you know what happened? What happened to the one that had been slain? Nobody talked. Her argument didn't talk about him. And this morning, I want to bring this up to point something out to you. I don't think the world's changed a whole lot. I really don't. Today, you'll have people that will argue, and I'll just give you a few examples. How about abortion? That's murder. It is. The Bible, makes it clear. The taking of any life at all, it doesn't matter if the person is defenseless, doesn't matter if they can speak or not, taking of any life is murder. You think all those babies, as far as our society is concerned, they're forgotten. They are. They're ignored. They're forgotten. They're not given a voice. Nobody stands up for them. Well, I don't say nobody, but as far as our society today, they are forgotten and set aside. Now, they're not forgotten before God, I guarantee you that. And by the way, I believe they'll stand in judgment someday. They exist, and their souls exist, which is kind of a scary thought to those that go in that direction. But keep in mind, in our society today, we often are lenient on those who commit the crimes, and we forget those that have been harmed, those that have been killed in some cases. We just ignore their what has happened to them. That's what she was pushing. That's what she was hoping for. Now, like I said, I'm not saying this is correct. That's what she was pushing. That's what she was trying to get David to do. And basically, she was clever. She made a good argument. And she made, you notice, the Bible tells us here that David basically told her he was going to consider it. You notice it says there in verse 8, "And the king said unto the woman, Go to thine house, and I will give charge concerning thee." In other words, David heard her out. You know what David said? He said, okay, let me consider this. He probably would investigate it a little bit more, maybe think on it, and then he'd give her a decision. But notice what she did. She says, "And the woman of Tekoa said unto the king, My lord, O king, the iniquity be on me and on my father's house, and the king and his throne be guiltless." You know what she's basically saying? She said, give me a decision now. Be careful of anyone that is impatient. She says, give me a decision now. I want you to give me a decision now. And then she even throws this in. She says, hey, and if it's a wrong verdict and it's proven otherwise, then the blame will be on me. Now that sounds good. But you know, when you think about it, that all that did was promote David to make a decision without any kind of discretion. To make a decision without considering everything. It promoted or encouraged David just to give her her way is what it did. And then the Bible tells us there in verse 10, it says, "And the king said, Whosoever saith aught unto thee, bring him to me, and he shall not touch thee any more." So basically David, he didn't give in yet, but he basically told her, said, hey, okay, if that's the case, you really want this, then if anybody gives you a hard time, in other words, he understood that her family may come and cause problems. He said, if anyone gives you a hard time, you bring him to me, let him know, and then we'll deal with it. And then notice what happens next. In verse 11, she says, "Then said she, I pray thee, let the king remember the Lord thy God, that thou wouldest not suffer the revengers of blood to destroy any more, lest they destroy my son. And he said, As the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of thy son fall to the earth." Now here's where we get to it. She was persistent. She was cunning. Notice what she did. Now, if we had more time, I'd go through this in more detail, but you know what she did? Her last argument with David was a religious argument. You see, just because somebody talks about God does not mean we should just jump on board and follow what they're saying or what they're encouraging. Notice she said there, "I pray thee, let the king remember the Lord thy God, that thou wouldest not suffer the revengers of blood to destroy any more." Now, what she said concerning God was accurate and true. God does not promote vengeance, and God does not promote bloodshed. But you know, on the other hand, she misapplied this to her situation. And here's why I say this. If her story were true, now I don't believe it was. I believe it was just a fabricated story to get David to make a decision. But if her story were true, basically she's saying, guess what? The Lord God has mercy and he's forgiving. How about you just let my son who committed a great crime go? Now, this morning, I'll just say this. If David would apply her argument basically to the kingdom, it would be anarchy. I mean, anybody could use that argument to get away with anything they wanted. You know, that's what her argument basically was. Now, you know, the Bible does say God is forgiving. But you know what the Bible also tells us? It tells us that God dislikes sin, of course, and that those that remain unrepentant, those that sin and choose to live in sin, that they'll be accountable to God, and that God will stand in judgment over sinners. That, the Bible makes that very clear. And so here, she made this case, but she misapplied it, basically. And David made a quick decision. And I think it was Dwight Eisenhower, when he was president, said one of the models he tried to live by was make no mistake in a hurry, is what he said. Make no mistake in a hurry. In other words, slow down with decision making. It's better to think things through, consider all the facts, and make a proper decision than it is to make a quick decision and have it be a mistake. David made a quick decision here. He should have stuck with his first, I think he should have stuck with his first word when he told her, "I'll go home and I'll consider it." He should have stuck with that. Instead, notice at the end, we read there, it says, doth not fetch home, I got confused. Okay, verse 11, I'm sorry. And he said, as the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of thy son fall to the earth. In other words, he declared that her son was pretty much pardoned, that everything's okay. Now we get into what she's really there for. Notice it says in verse, she set this all up, is what she did. You know, she could have been a good salesman. I'm not ripping on any salesmen. There are probably some good salesmen out there, but she could have been an excellent salesperson. She set the scene up for David, and now she's going to get at what she really wanted to get to. And here it is in verse 12. It begins there. Then the woman said, let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak one word unto my lord the king. And he said, say on. And the woman said, wherefore then hast thou thought such a thing against the people of God? For the king doth speak this thing as one which is faulty. Now she's bold here. I mean, she's accusing David of being a hypocrite, basically, in that the king doth not fetch home again his banished. Notice what she did here. Now she's getting to what she wants to get to. We're going to look at two things, David's dilemma and David's discovery. Now, David's problem here was that he wanted Absalom home, couldn't bring him home because of sin, because of punishment that was required. And then she comes with this story and she presents everything, and David provides a quick decision and pardons her son. And notice what she does next. She turns the tables on him. Bible tells us she was clever. She was a wise woman. She flipped the tables on him and basically said, you're a hypocrite. You have just pardoned my son, allowed him to come back or say that he can live in the land without any problems, without any issues, without any punishment or judgment. Nobody can say anything against him. Yet your son, Absalom, whom the people love, you will not bring back. I could see David's going, uh-oh. He got himself into a corner now. And that's what she did. She flipped the tables on him. She was a wise woman. She was very smart. And the Bible tells us that she told that to David. I tell you, she was also bold, I think, is what she was. This is a bold thing to say to anybody, let alone a king. So she accused David of being faulty or hypocritical. And then, basically, she began to reason with David. It says there in verse 14, it says, for we must needs die and are as water spilt on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. Neither doth God respect any person, yet doth he devise means that his banished be not expelled from him. Now this is an interesting verse. I'm going to give you two thoughts on this verse. Some believe, you know, that first part she's talking about death. Some believe she's referring to Amnon's death, which could be possible. In other words, she's saying, guess what? We all have to die sometime. It was just Amnon's turn to die. Now if that was the case, that's a terrible argument when you think about it. Nobody should make that argument, you know, as justifying murder. Some believe, on the other hand, that she's referring to that, you know, David's death. That, hey, get things right with your son now before, you know, everyone's going to have to die and times, you know, you don't get to live forever and get things settled now. Either way, she was wise. It was an argument. And there's nothing wrong with that thought there. But notice what she says next. She says, neither doth God respect any person, yet doth he devise means that his banished be not expelled from him. Then she goes on to say, basically, now, you know what I find interesting in this passage, and I don't have time to develop this, but this woman in the Old Testament is referring to forgiveness, mercy, grace, all referring to the Lord. You know, there are a lot of people that believe the Old Testament has nothing to do with grace and mercy. It does. You find it throughout the Old Testament. Those that lived in the Old Testament looked forward to a Messiah. Now, here she refers to God devising means. It says there that his banished be not expelled from him. I'm going to give you one thought on this. And you think of salvation. This is, to me, now I'm not saying she was preaching a salvation message here, but I'm going to just give you one thought on this here this morning. I hope and pray everyone here is saved. If you're not saved and you don't end up going to heaven with God forever, it won't be God's fault. Because God has provided a way for you to be saved. Your sin has separated you from God. The Bible tells us that all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Sin has separated you from God. God is a perfect, holy, righteous God. We could not approach Him in our sinful condition or our sinful state. God understood that, and God knew that we'd be banished forever. So what did God do? He sent His Son. John 3:16, for God so loved the world, gave His only begotten Son. He sent His Son to die on the cross so that sinners could be saved. You see, God has provided a way, and that way is through Jesus Christ. You see, when people stand before God, if they refuse Jesus, I believe when they stand before God, there's going to be no excuse. God will say, there was a way to me. You just didn't go to it. You chose to live in your sin and continue in your own ways. And so this morning, there was truth in that what she said. There was truth in that. She's, you know, what she said is correct, that God, I guess you say, has provided a way for her banished, I guess, for his banished to be returned or to come to him. And so she provided some truth in there. But here's some thoughts, and we're going to move on. I don't want to spend too much time on this because I want to get into David's decision and then a little bit of Absalom here this morning. But before we move on, here's some thoughts on this. She had truth, but it was misapplied. You know, this morning, be careful of some of the teachers and preachers in this world. You have a Bible. Take everything to God's Word. Test it. Measure it out. Just because someone says something and it sounds good doesn't mean it is correct. And that's what I want to warn you on. You know, she here had a good argument. But some of her, I guess you say, she was trying to apply it to Absalom and David, and there was no really application. Here's one reason why. We don't read anywhere that Absalom had a repentant heart. In other words, he had no desire to get right. He had no desire for forgiveness. He was proud. He thought nothing was wrong. You see, to come to God and find his forgiveness, there has to be a repentant heart. We don't find that with Absalom. In other words, she wanted David just to ignore his sin, bring him back, because guess what? The people wanted him. And that's what she made clear. She, you know, we're not going to get into this, but she basically said that she was there because of the people. That the people wanted Absalom. And that's why she wanted David to forgive Absalom, because guess what? The people would be happy. The nation would be happy. And then basically David, I think, understood a little bit of what was going on. We're going to skip down. And it says there in verse 18, it says, then the king answered and said unto the woman, hide not from me, I pray thee, the thing that I shall ask thee. And the woman said, let my lord the king now speak. Now, something was said, or something, I guess you say, clicked in David's mind here. Because notice what he says next, verse 19. And the king said, is not the hand of Joab with thee in all this? And the woman answered and said, as thy soul liveth, my lord the king, none can turn to the right hand nor to the left from aught that my lord the king hath spoken. For thy servant Joab, he bade me, and he put all these words in the mouth of thine handmaid. Notice this. David was wise. David was a very wise man. Something clicked, or she said something maybe that he realized, hey, this wasn't her doing. She was put up to this. And I imagine next he said it had to have been Joab. And he asked her, and she, to her credit, she told the truth now. I think she understood that she had better tell the truth, and she said it was Joab. And then this leads us into the last part of this chapter. It says there, verse 21, and the king said unto Joab, behold, now I have done this thing. Go therefore, bring the young man Absalom again. And Joab fell to the ground on his face and bowed himself and thanked the king. And Joab said, today thy servant knoweth that I have found grace in thy sight, my lord, O king, and that the king hath fulfilled the request of his servant. So Joab arose, went to Geshur, and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. And the king said, let him turn to his own house. Let him not see my face. So Absalom returned to his own house and saw not the king's face. Now this is interesting. David was swayed, and David basically gave the green light. He said, okay, bring him back. Go get him. So he calls Joab in. Now Joab falls down and thanks David for being merciful. I imagine it was because he knew now that David knew who had put that woman up and how the deception was all set up. And maybe that's why he's being grateful now, because David was forgiving him for this action. Anyway, he sent Joab to get Absalom. Now, evidently, Absalom was not in hiding. That's what I think is interesting. I think his presence was probably common knowledge. The Bible says it told us where he went. I imagine the people knew where he was. Joab knew where he was. And there's no indication that there was a struggle, a fight of any kind. He just went, got him, brought him back to Israel. And the Bible says that when he, I guess you'd say, came into Israel, that he was ordered back to his home. Now, this is important for us to notice. He wasn't given his position back in the kingdom. Evidently, he was given his estate, and that was about it. He was brought home. The Bible tells us he didn't even see David for 2 whole years. I think that's interesting. So we have 5 years where David and Absalom did not talk, didn't even see each other. And here we have that Absalom is brought back, and he's immediately sent back to his home. Now, he was blessed. I'll say this. He should have been thankful he got his estate back. He didn't have to get that back. David could have just sent him in some small little shack somewhere. But he gave him his estate back, gave him his home back, and the Bible tells us that he went there. But he didn't see the king. In other words, I believe he didn't receive his authority back. He didn't receive his position back. He just was allowed to be present in Israel. That was about it. Basically, you have your life and move forward. Now, why did this occur? I don't know. But I'm going to give you some thoughts on this. Maybe David tried to please everybody. Have you ever tried to please everyone? You try to please everyone, you're going to please nobody, is usually what happens. And I think David, this is just my thought on this, and I'll give you some, I guess, say, practical thoughts on this. First, he tried to please Joab. Joab was the one who really worked to get Absalom home for whatever reason. And then David tried to please Joab. Secondly, of course, David tried to please Absalom. When he came back, he didn't punish him. He just sent him to his house, his estate, and said, here you go. You can just pick up your life again here in Israel. And thirdly, you know who I think David tried to please? Himself. That's why I think he didn't go see him. Because he knew. Have you ever done something where you just inside, you knew it was wrong, and you just didn't want to deal with it, and so you just, that guilt. That's what I think happened with David. For 2 years, he refused to see his son. You know, the first thought I had, I remember one of the first times I ever read this chapter when I was younger, the first thought I had that came to my mind was, why did he even bring him back? He's not even going to go talk with him for 2 years. Why did he bring him back? He could have just left him where he was and let him continue. But you know, David, I think, had a guilty conscience as far as he knew Absalom deserved some type of punishment, didn't receive it. And so there, he put him there for 2 years. Now, Absalom was adored in the nation. Now, this is where we really get into this is going to pick up, not only this week, but next week. It says, verse 25, but in Israel there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. I mentioned at the beginning of this chapter, when we talked, he was a physical specimen to behold. He probably was, an athlete of all athletes. The Bible tells us here, from the sole of his foot, even to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. And when he pulled his head, in other words, shaved it, for it was at every year's end that he pulled it, because the hair was heavy on him, therefore he pulled it. He weighed the hair of his head at 200 shekels after the king's weight. I found anywhere from 3 to 5 pounds is what people have estimated that is. Now, here's some thoughts on that. Usually in the ancient Eastern, they would put oils in their hair. Basically, he would go a whole year without cutting his hair, then he'd shave it, and he was a proud man. Not only would he shave it, but then he'd weigh it and tell everybody how much it weighed and how glorious his hair was and so forth. And then it says there, and unto Absalom there were born 3 sons and 1 daughter whose name was Tamar. She was a woman of a fair countenance. So here we have Absalom. The Bible tells us that the people loved him, or the people adored him, basically for his physical beauty. He was definitely the handsomest man in all of Israel. And you know what? That's why he was popular. Because of his appearance. You know, it had nothing to do with his moral character. We don't read anything of him being a morally good man. Also, it had nothing to do with his experience. He hadn't led any armies out to win any battles. He hadn't led anything to do in Israel. It had nothing to do with his experience. It had nothing to do with his abilities. The Bible tells us nothing of his skills. It just tells us that he looked good. He looked the part. And people enjoyed looking upon him as a physical specimen. You know, I think what we have here is a testimony to the shallowness of Israel at the time. That's what they looked upon. That's what they enjoyed. And it says there he had no blemish. His hair grew thick. And, And he was proud of this. And nothing is said concerning of his love for God or his devotion. He wasn't a man that was after God's heart. And then it mentions his family, that he had, you know, the children. Now, the last section here, we find Absalom's, being discontent. The Bible says for 2 years he went to Jerusalem, didn't see David, and he became upset, the Bible tells us there. Verse 28, it says there, "So Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem and saw not the king's face. Therefore Absalom sent for Joab to have sent him to the king." Now, this passage here, this verse here, provides proof that he was basically on, I don't even call it lockdown, that he couldn't leave his house. He had to call for Joab. He couldn't even go find Joab. He had to stay there, and that's why he called for him. It says, "Therefore Absalom sent for Joab to have sent him to the king, but he would not come to him." Now Joab's ignoring him. I think Joab probably realized now that Absalom wasn't going to be king. He was nothing to him anymore, so he was continuing on. It says, "And when he sent again the second time, he would not come." Notice verse 30. "Therefore he said unto his servants, See, Joab's field is near mine. He hath barley there, go and set it on fire. And Absalom's servants set the field on fire. Then Joab arose and came to Absalom unto his house and said unto him, Wherefore have thy servants set my field on fire?" Now imagine, we have two men here. I could just see this confrontation. I imagine Joab's furious and saying, "What are you doing?" And Absalom just as courageous as getting ready to confront him concerning David the king. You know what we have? Absalom, when you think about it, got that stuck in there. Absalom's rage is what we have here. First, he was discontent where God had, or where David had placed him. He wasn't happy. He wanted to have his power back, his position. And my personal opinion, he was getting ready to take the kingdom is what he was doing. He was preparing himself. And he was discontent. So what did he do? He just destroyed Joab's field. Now think about that. First, that's an immature action. It really is. He didn't get his way, so he becomes destructive. Now we kind of, it's not right, but we expect it with 2 years old, 2 years old, 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds to act like that. But here we have a grown man not getting his way, and so he's going to destroy someone else's field. Also, when you think about this, it was inconsiderate. He didn't care about anyone else. I mean, that could have taken off, cut other fields on fire, could have injured people. He didn't care. He was going to make his point. Very inconsiderate. And finally, it was insulting to Joab. Joab's a commander, top man in the army, and here he is going to insult him like that. He was just rude, I guess you say, individual is what Absalom was. And that's what he did. Joab showed up. Joab was upset, obviously, but here he arrives, and basically Absalom, provides his request to Joab. He says there in verse 32, "Absalom answered, Behold, I sent unto thee, saying, Come hither, that I may send thee to the king to say, Wherefore am I come from Geshur? It had been good for me to have been there still. Now therefore let me see the king's face, and if there be any iniquity in me, let him kill me." So Joab came to the king, told him, and when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king, bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. Now, here's what we have. We have a spoiled young man not getting his way, so he's throwing a fit, and he gets Joab there, and Joab, I imagine, is furious, and basically Absalom says, here's why. I want to see the king. Now, I'm going to give you some thoughts here. This was very audacious when you think about it. He demanded to see David, even though David didn't want to see him, evidently, at the time. Also, it was ungrateful. There was no thanksgiving there for David. We find nowhere where Absalom was thankful for being home. I don't know if he ever really wanted to be home. He didn't care. He just wanted power and authority. Also, it was demanding. He said, I'll see the king. I'm going to go. I want to see him. And you think of this, too. It was very arrogant, believing that he had a right to see the king. And here's another thought, too. He challenged David, in a sense. Basically, he said, if you have evidence to kill me, then kill me. Now, David didn't, of course. But that's the type of man we have here. Very just bold, brash, arrogant, proud, standing up to the king and saying, here am I. Now, here's part of the problem. And I'm going to give you some practical thoughts. We're going to wrap this up this morning. David and Absalom was the title of this. Now, you know what happened here? And I think that David was a good man. Obviously, he loved his nation. He loved God. He probably loved his family. But you know what? Somewhere along the line, he struggled with Absalom. What I mean by that is, you know, have you ever heard of tough love? Sometimes there needs to be a little bit of tough love. Now, I'm not excusing David. Maybe David should have went and talked to Absalom. Maybe he should have met him and said, hey, here's why I'm not going to bring you back. Or here's why you're back, but here's why you can't have any position in the kingdom. Maybe he probably should have. But he didn't. And it created just this big rift. You know, first, And here's just practical. Communication's important. Whether it's in a marriage or whether it's in a family, communicate. In a church, it's important. You know, when people don't communicate, you don't know what's going on, and who knows what problems are going to explode. That's what happened. There was no communication. And Absalom got upset. He got mad. He got angered. And the Bible tells us that he blew up is what he did. Now, David here met him and basically just gave him everything back that he wanted. You know, in closing, I'll give you a thought on this. David basically set himself up for what was coming next. David allowed Absalom to come back, no punishment. Then when Absalom demanded that he be allowed to have pretty much access to the throne, which basically meant he have his position back and his power, David basically said, okay. You see, David was setting himself up for the trouble to come. You know, if we're not careful, we can do the same thing. And I'm not talking necessarily about our family, but in any situation, if we're not careful, we can make decisions that will lead to more problems. So let's just try to walk with the Lord and seek the Lord. Now, next week we're going to look at Absalom a little bit more in detail. We're going to see his politics at work. And if you doubt at all, I encourage you to read that next chapter, because there's no doubt in my mind, if he were alive today, he would be sitting in Washington, D.C. He wouldn't be president. I guarantee he'd be a politician. Read that next chapter. This man knew how to work the people. He knew how to work the system. He knew how to get what he wanted. And a dangerous man is what he was, because he applied that all to his selfish desires.